Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com. And before that wolf eats my grandma, give that wolf a banana, give that wolf. And before that wolf eats my grandma, give that wolf a banana, give that wolf. Give that wolf.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, May 16th. Here we are back in the Classic Factory. I'm J.E. Skeetson, alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Can you believe it, guys? Only three playoff series left. Enjoy them while you got them.
Huh?
You know, conference finals. Funs. One, two, three.
21 games max.
I literally thought you were going to do the two conference finals and then the Flames Oilers in the NHL. That's why I was trying to set you up for that. But no, you're right. Three matchups left. Yeah.
Why? You don't think I'd enjoy the NBA finals?
I don't know. Your Flames
just
are live.
Just because I was
man.
Looking at the bracket here, looking at this odd Panthers logo. Did you see that Johnny Gaudreau shot? That was phenomenal.
Top shelf, man. Top shelf.
Here we go. We got our top shot hot boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o.
International man of mystery, taking it to the max, Lee Ellis.
Ah, friends. Those Leafs. How did my Leafs do?
Oh, the Maple Laughs. Living up to their name.
Yeah. Good season. Great season.
And last, certainly not least, yes, rocking the hockey music already here on a Monday, super producer JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Any final thoughts on those entertaining NHL Game 7s, Tass? Because the NBA ones were duds.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, you're pumped.
You got playoffs.
Your
you got Rangers, Pens, OT.
Yeah. How'd Panarin get that one in? Am I right?
Does this guy know more about hockey than you do?
I guess.
What's a Panarin? I make sure to write down one name from the game. So I always have one name deep in the pocket. Panarin and Johnny Hockey.
Panera Bread scored the game win.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it. Went with the broccoli cheese bread bowl right through the five hole.
You're just pandering to us Canadians here.
Nice. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Thanks to everybody for swinging by here on a Monday morning. Subscribe to No Dunks on YouTube. Like the video, comment, share the show. Email in your NBA questions. Questions all week long here. NoDunks@TheAthletic.com. You can tweet them in as well at NoDunksInc or drop them in the YouTube comments and get yourself an Athletic subscription. We got some of the best writers in the game breaking down all of these teams and all these series in the NBA and hockey included. Go to TheAthletic.com/NoDunks for a subscription. Okay. Yeah. NHL was a little more entertaining than the NBA Game 7s that we had on Sunday, but we're going to break them down, look to the offseason for some of these teams that lost, and then we'll do our initial thoughts on the conference finals. Tomorrow's podcast, we do the deep dive, okay? No dive in today.
Okay.
Don't dive in. This is shallow water only.
Okay. I learned that lesson the hard way once when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah.
It said
no diving, and I said, I can dive. Dived in and actually hit my arm, had a big scratch down my arm.
Okay, at least it was your arm, not your head. Yeah. Very dangerous. You can cannonball into shallow water, but you still got to be careful on the old butt cheeks.
That's 100% right? True, Skeets. Yeah. Got to be careful on the old butt cheeks.
All right.
That's going to make me change my one of my ad reads I got a little bit later on here, so let me make some notes.
Also, I haven't seen one single video of you doing a cannonball, and it's getting hot down here.
I've only been to like kiddie pools so far. I haven't gone to a full-size grown man pool where I'm going to be dominating the diving board, but wait for it. It's coming.
It's going to be hot here in Atlanta this week.
Oh, baby.
And speaking of a team that was hot, the Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks killed the Suns 123-90. 123-90 in the Game 7 blowout, and it was over by half. I mean, it was over before that, Trey, if we're being honest. It was over in like 12 minutes, this game.
It doesn't happen a lot and very rarely in the playoffs, but every once in a while, you see an NBA score that makes you think, is that really really the score, and that had to have been the case for anybody tuning into Game 7 at halftime when it was 57-27 Mavericks, a.k.a. 27-27 Luka Doncic versus the Suns, yeah. a.k.a. 27-21 the Suns versus Spencer Dinwiddie. There was even a point in the second half where Kevin Harlan said, yes, if you're joining us now, that score is correct. The Suns got booed off the court at halftime at home during a Game 7. That is unbelievable that it happened. The second half of the game did transpire, but it didn't really matter. Mm-hmm. All that really happened was Luka getting hot in the third quarter and smiling at the Suns back it down the court every single time. That's when I turned in to Rangers versus Pens. It went from the fourth quarter to the third period. Major update upgrade to see that. So, I don't know. This was a seriously unbelievable collapse to me from Phoenix. Reminded me instantly, Bulls-Jazz, Game 3, 1998. Bulls won 96-54. They led at halftime 49-31, but they were the favorites in that game. They were playing at home, and it was the NBA Finals, but it was only Game 3. Also saw a lot of comparisons to Celtics-Lakers Game 6, 2008. The Celtics won by 39. That was also a home win there. This was the Suns, a complete no-show at home. Game 7, during a season they had by far the best record in the league.
Yeah.
Total duds from the big three. Devin Booker, 11 points, 3 of 14 shooting, 0 of 7 in the first half. DeAndre Ayton, 5 points on 2 of 5 shooting, only played 17 minutes, 1 of 4 in the first half. And Chris Paul, don't call me Andre Miller, 10 points, 4 of 8 shooting, 0 for 5 in the first half. When he turned 37, all of his skills left his body. There's no other way to figure out what's going on here. They barely avoided the biggest Game 7 loss in NBA history, but this might be the worst Game 7 loss in NBA history, considering, you know, the entirety of the season, how far the Suns went, the fact that they had a 2-0 lead in this series, they were up 3-2 in this series, and home court had been super powerful for all seven, or the first six games, at least, in this one. So I couldn't believe it. I just could not believe that that was really the score, and that there was, like, no comeback at all from the Suns in the second half. They didn't even make it interesting at any point. I think the Mavericks scored the first five, and that's when Luka was outscoring the entire Suns team. Sorry about your computer.
That's fine.
Yeah.
33 points in the end. The difference is a lot smaller than the actual game felt. It felt like a 40-point game, a 45-point game, just because the Suns beat the Mavs in that fourth quarter. It was hard watching everything. It was just hard. It's unbelievable. The Chris Paul thing is the biggest thing to me because they were doubling Devin Booker, and Chris Paul was there. If you look at the starting lineup, he's the guy that really has to create. And from game two, where he was on fire, he had that 14-point fourth quarter. Just an incredible fall off games three to game seven. Is it just being old? Is it the quad contusion? Because he just wasn't looking at the rim.
Yeah.
In the first half, Trey mentioned 0 of 5, but he really had to take the pressure off of Devin Booker, and that absolutely didn't happen. Didn't hit a shot until the third quarter. And now it was cool. One cool thing was, you know, the opposing team gets to pick which side they're going to play on. So Jason Kidd had his defense in front of him, and one of
switched
the
it up.
He switched it up in game seven. That's a James, a Jason Kidd maneuver that you're gonna remember, especially because we had that audio tracks of Jason Kidd yelling at his defense to cover Devin Booker. Essentially, he was calling out each move during a 24-second possession.
Yep.
Double, 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 five, double, and he was just. It was just happening right in front of them, and they obviously suffocated that Suns team. But Chris Paul had to provide the breathing apparatus, but he did not. He just had to be that guy. It was odd. Jason Kidd gets a win. We didn't see a freaking crunch time minute in seven games in this series.
Wow.
Nothing came down to the wire. I thought Booker and Doncic would fight after the game. Booker and Doncic obviously hate each other, but I was surprised to see a lot of sportsmanship after the game. You know, there was a tiny little kerfuffle, but that doesn't count. And Doncic and Dinwiddie, I mean, yes, laughing, joking, the first pair of teammates in a Game 7 to score 30-plus points since
Kobe, Shaq.
That's right, Kobe and Shaq. So, wow. Just top to bottom, an abomination.
That was crazy. I mean, Luka, this gets thrown around a lot, Lee. That guy's built for this. But it's fucking true with this guy. This guy loves this shit. The bigger the game, the more he enjoys it. And I think he even relished the fact that it's on the road. And that he came out and hit a shot. I think it was on eight and he got switched.
Yeah,
and
he
hit a little Dirk-like fadeaway there around the free throw line. Then it was on. And he scored very quickly. And they just got this massive lead. Dinwiddie chipping in and it was over. But he finished with 35, 10, 4. He only played 30 minutes. and once again has an amazing game in an elimination game.
He was smirking after the first two baskets, yeah. And I was like, that could come back to haunt you if the Suns win this game. They'll say Luka was cocky from the start, but instead he just grew even more cockier in confidence. But he had it because he was just spinning around doing whatever he wanted in that first half. And again, it was over by then. And it's rare, very rare, that I'm actually like feeling sorry for a team. I was feeling sorry for the Suns. Yeah. I was like, oh my God, can you imagine what it must be like when you're out there? You're down 40 points in a game seven and they're just coming down and still draining threes on you. And you had a couple of nice crowd shots of the fans just sort of like,
oh my God,
I can't believe they're still hitting these threes. They're still doing it here. This was an absolute total and utter domination. Obviously, guys like Brunson and Spencer were great, but it started with Doncic just like completely calm in the moment, not rattled, not fazed. He talked after game five and he said, everyone's talking when they're up. The series ain't over. He came back and, just mashed the Phoenix Suns here. And I've got to say, Jason Kidd, I've got to give him a lot of credit. He was a guy I dismissed as a head coach. I saw them after the first game of the season down here in the fortress, and I'm like, all they do is just basically hope guys hit threes. It's working pretty well for them right now, and he has done a fantastic job because I think defensively he has also been got his guys to at least play hard on that end. He knows they're undersized. They don't have a great center, but instead he puts confidence in all those guys to just go out there, and if you're open, take that shot and make it and drive with confidence. Dinwiddie was putting on a show, just like embarrassing guys like that. But it all starts with Luka. If Luka doesn't have that sort of start and basically say, I'm in control of this game, maybe it's a different outcome, but for the Phoenix Suns, I mean, they led 2-0 in this series. They led 3-2 in this series. They had the best home and road record this season. They had a fantastic season. I don't know anybody who actually picked the Mavericks to win this series. I don't know if you guys saw it.
Few and far between. I'm sure there was a odd person out there. Not me. I mean, I had Suns winning the fight. I had Suns winning the title. Like, I was just as shocked as anybody of this.
Suns Bucks was the one.
Yeah, exactly.
But one of the most impressive performances I've ever seen in a Game 7 by a player who's only, what, 23, Luka. Tim Cato had a great write-up last week on Luka saying, okay, yeah, in the NBA, he's only had one Game 7 before, but he's played in massive games in Europe where, you know, people are lighting flares in the stands. They'll firebomb your home after a game. So going to cushy Phoenix is probably pretty comfortable for Luka. It's like a pickup run.
Yeah, no, he was enjoying it. Every shot there early, smirking over at that one particular side who must have obviously had some words for him, and he was giving it back to them. You know, you talked about the doubling on Booker, just back to the Dallas Mavericks defense. Like, they did a great job, obviously, with making, like, difficult for Booker, putting him in tough spots. But that means somebody's open. And where is Chris Paul? What the hell happened to him? DeAndre Ayton. We thought that was like a huge positive for the Suns. It's like, okay, yeah, Maxi Kleber, he can stretch the floor. You know, Dwight gives him some minutes, but like, man, they're small. He could eat in this series, especially when Chris Paul is operating, setting him up.
Yeah.
He was an ofer. He got benched. Sounds like, you know, Monty Williams.
Something
internal. And we'll talk about him and the the dilemma they have with what type of contract they go forward with him, or sign trade, all that. But, you know, and then Bridges and Crowder. I mean, I'm sorry, but nobody stepped up. That means somebody was open, though, and they never found that guy, or they could never take advantage. And when they got down early, those buttholes got real tight, because then you suddenly had, like, JaVale McGee finger rolling in the paint, Crowder attacking, like, three guys in transition. Like, you could sense, like, somebody stopped the bleeding, and I think they obviously let go of the rope a little bit there. That fell into the Mavericks' hands, and it was like, guys, there's still a lot of game left, but, man, it just spiraled out of control really quickly here.
Yeah, what did the Mavericks know? They knew that they could break this Suns team, I think, from the first quarter coming into this game. That's why they went with that double defense. That's why Jason Kidd wanted his bench in front of that defense. They were ready to shut Booker down, and everybody's buttholes was tight on the Suns side. I think Landry Shamet came in and looked like the best Sun out there. He was dancing around a little bit. But everybody was extremely tight. They were missing open shots, for the shots that they got. But they seemed to stop moving the ball when Devin Booker.
Yes.
You know, he had that first quarter where he was taking it to the hole a little bit, and he took it a couple times to the hole. Tried to go right at Luka, was picked up after being fouled because he just threw his body into Luka, and you can hear him on the camera say, "Oh, the Luka special," as he just threw his body into Luka, and that. Yeah, obviously came back to bite him a little bit. But I thought when he would pass the ball to Chris Paul, they just weren't getting into the lane whatsoever. It was like a pass back and forth up top. They just were not penetrating whatsoever. And when Chris Paul did get into that middle, he would pass out. And the threes were not falling for, you know, the guys who were supposed to hit threes like Crowder. and Bridges. Mm-hmm. And I guess the Mavs knew mentally that they could break this team. That must have been it. That this doesn't happen unless the Suns don't believe in themselves. I mean, they just weren't there. They didn't show up in this game.
Phoenix joins the 06-07 Mavericks and the 15-16 Spurs as the third team in league history to win at least 64 games in the regular season and fail to make at least the conference finals. 64 wins. It's a lot of wins. There are not that many teams in NBA history with that many, and I guess it's not really shocking that there's not many teams that haven't even made it to the conference finals. But, I mean, I just can't believe... It's one thing to lose a Game 7. And we said it. Like, the problem was you let them. You didn't go on and win one game in Dallas... And you just set up a Game 7 where anything can happen. And also they have Luka. That could be a recipe for disaster. That all said, no one would have thought they would have lost by, you know, basically 30 plus points here in a Game 7 at home.
Very weird that it was a repeat of Game 6. Because Game 6 was a terrible effort by Phoenix as well. But it seemed like, okay, fine. If we lose this one, we've got another one back home. We'll show up for that one. But obviously a complete no-show. Yeah. Ayton had a poor game. He didn't really do much. And like you said, it seems like he got benched a little bit there. But I mean, that's 100% to me on Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Yeah. Like, it would be great if Ayton was a dump the ball into him. He's going to score in the post. That's just not the player he is. Same with Mikal Bridges. Like, those are guys who need plays made for them. And if you're able to double Devin Booker, Chris Paul has to be able to take advantage, or the other way around. Like, you're built around two all NBA guards. One of them should be able to do something in a 4-on-3 situation. But I mean, the last two games, Chris Paul had 17 turnovers between Booker and Paul in the last two games of this series. Considering how well the Mavs were shooting once they finally found their shot in Phoenix, you have no chance of winning. And that's why they got blown out, and you're seeing minus 40s for all these guys in the starting lineup.
Yeah, not only was it a repeat of Game 6, but also a repeat of the finals last year, considering they're 2-0 up. Just didn't think that that would happen again. You think that they would learn from it.
The Chris Paul part is just back to that. He averaged 23.5 and very little turnovers like he usually does in the first two games of this series. And then, Trey, you said it, as soon as he hit the age of 37, he fell apart. I mean, he averaged under 10 points and nearly had four turnovers. That's the crazier part with Chris Paul over these last five games where they lose four of the five. Wow. What? And then, there's reports that the quad is not great.
Yeah, but he wasn't looking at the rim either.
I think a thumb as well. But he didn't make any excuses after the game either. No. And that's what I liked about him, is that he was obviously, him and Devin were together, and they were obviously embarrassed and humiliated. But they did front up, and they didn't make excuses. They said we weren't good enough. As for him himself, all those stats are true, but he just seemed to lack that aggression. He didn't seem to even try to attack defenders, which was the real surprise.
Because he'll do that thing, like, it's Chris Paul, right? He'll, like, hang out for two or three quarters, just try and set the table, and then, you know, obviously, in a close game, he will really get aggressive looking for a shot. But we've seen Chris Paul before in, like, you know, this is a, like, they called him the point guard, right? He'll understand the situation, like, oh, maybe I got to get aggressive here in the second quarter, first quarter, whatever, because we don't have it going. And yeah, that wasn't anywhere to be found these last couple games.
And, you know, it's not like someone like Reggie Bullock or whoever's on him, he can't just do what he wants against those guys. So he just didn't seem to have that sort of juice, which is very, very weird for him. Again, you point out they were the first team or the third team to lose, but they also led this series 2-0 and 3-2. Yeah, that must be the first time I would think someone's blown a series. Because I know the We Believe Warriors were one of them, but they never led 3-2.
Yeah.
And the Spurs against the Grizzlies, I'm guessing, it was the other
15-16.
One. 15-16. Yeah. So, wild stuff. I mean, but that's the thing. Again, when I'm watching it last night, I'm like, I never really feel like that must just be awful for those Suns players, but it felt like it.
You have a little bit of the secondhand embarrassment.
Yeah, you do. You do. Yeah. You do. Because we hate losing on a Wednesday night in a pickup if you lose in the last bucket.
True.
Imagine going down like that in front of your home fans. People have probably paid thousands of dollars for a Game 7 ticket there, and some of them were out of there at halftime.
Well, also to add to that, this, you know, I mean, who knows? We'll see what happens. But their championship window was maybe right here. Right here.
Well, yeah.
Like, it's open.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Anybody can win this thing.
Oh, no, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
That means they could have, too.
Absolutely.
And they were the favorites all regular season, and that's a big reason why I had them going all the way there.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us felt, from what we saw last season, that they had really responded well to the heartbreak and devastation of losing the finals.
Right,
it looked
right.
like they were much better, and Bridges had taken a big step up, Cam Johnson, you know, those guys who had really benefited from the experience. But ultimately, it was their two main stars that let them down, closing this one out.
Yep.
So, I mean, Booker's hesitancy as well, there's no excuse for that. He I don't know what he was doing out there, but he didn't look to attack and score.
Yeah. Well, Tass is right. He was attacking in the first quarter. Nothing was dropping still. And then doubles kept coming and coming. And he didn't have it these last two games. He shot brutal percentages over these game 6 and 7 here, along with all these other guys on his team that came up short. Wild. And now Luka's through to the conference finals. And, the league is pumped, I'm sure. I mean, this is huge. He's a top five, wherever you got him on your list in this league. Obviously a super young talent still.
He finished 5th in MVP behind Devin Booker, I guess, didn't he?
that's right. There's some stat going around Twitter. This is the first time that we've ever had a conference finals with the four teams where we didn't have at least one guy who finished in the top four of MVP voting.
Wow.
Just a weird little fact going around there. On the old Twitter machines.
Yeah, I like that one. Because I was looking it up yesterday. Who's going to be the highest voter left? And
is it Luka or Tatum then?
Luka finished 5th, I think.
He finished 5th and then Tatum was 6th? Is that right?
I think so, yeah, because I thought it was Booker.
Well, let's talk about the Suns sort of offseason here, especially Ayton, and then we will get to just sort of teeing up the Warriors Mavericks Conference Finals. So, what is the biggest question? Is it the Ayton dilemma here for the Suns this offseason, or is there something else?
Yeah, it's DeAndre Ayton. He's a restricted free agent. He wanted a 5-year max before this year. Apparently, the Suns front office offered him 4 in the max, but wouldn't go to the 5 in the max. He is, an extremely solid player. 16-10, 60% shooting over his 4-year career. Does he dare sign a qualifying offer and just be paid $16 million this offseason and then go wherever he wants? Or does he just look at the landscape, get a 4-year max from someone else, and potentially have the Suns re-sign as they can, sign him to that same deal, and he would come back? Talking about this championship window, do they believe in DeAndre Ayton as their number two, I would say? Because if Chris Paul is 37 years old and he couldn't get it done in this offseason when the opposition made it clear, let's double Devin, see what happens. And nobody could step up. Obviously, DeAndre Ayton left this game pissed at Monty Williams, I suppose because he only played 17 minutes. I'm not sure that's a rift that they can't heal. But is he enough to be a number two guy? Are they going to be able to go to him over and over and over again? And he isn't a dump it, just give it to him, face up type guy. He is a guy who needs to be on the roll to be set up. And that's the worrisome part if you're thinking about winning next season. Chris Paul is, it's got to be the age. I mean, what else could it be that he just isn't able to do it for 4 straight series? He was incredible for part of this run. So do you believe in Ayton to be that number two guy? I suppose they could. But with the lack of ability and Mikal Bridges and Jay Crowder right now as your other options in this starting lineup to be able to create for themselves, Ayton sort of has to be that guy. So that's the question that they're asking. Not only the number they give him, but you're locking into another couple years because you got to remember Chris Paul is getting paid approximately $30 million for the next 2 seasons here.
He's got 25.
He signed that 3-year $90 million deal that starts next season. I thought it started this season. So that's what your team is.
Right, and so if you give Ayton the max or something around that, then you are a luxury tax team here too. It's been a long time since I think Sarver leaning into that idea, like 09, 010. Or 09, 010 was the last time the Suns went into the luxury tax, but yeah. What do you do with Ayton?
He's going to be back. I would imagine he'll get a max from somebody, and I think that the Suns should match it because he's still a young guy. I don't think that the qualifying offer is going to be the way he goes. That's pretty rare, and I remember during his NBA draft time, he signed with Puma because they offered him the biggest bag. So I assume he's still watching that bag. And he's a solid player, but you definitely saw his limitations here. I thought the Suns actually missed Dario Saric kind of in this series. They just don't have a small ball necessarily lineup because, like you're saying, they would rather run McGee out there as a backup guy or maybe Biombo as a backup guy. So that little variance of having a small ball 5, getting Saric back will help next summer. But, I don't know what's going on with Ayton. It is a weird season considering they didn't extend him right away, and it ended kind of strange with him playing 17 minutes. Monty Williams said it's internal. He's probably everybody's just pissed when that's happening, right? Like, Ayton was kind of loafing defensively, so they're down 40. Let's yank him. But I think he'll be back. I think he's solid, and you would love to see him take that next step to be either a playmaker in the short role, which doesn't necessarily seem like his game, or more likely to me, really develop your post game so you can punish some small guys inside. He's got a nice hook shot, but I would love to see him try and dunk some more next season, get to the line. So I think he'll be back. I think it's smart to bring him back. This is obviously still a very good team. Yeah. You just need your stars to show up in star-making time.
So you think it's more likely, as a restricted free agent, some team. I mean, there's not a ton of teams with that type of cap space, but Pistons, Pacers, Magic, I think the Spurs are one of them. Blazers could get there, but you'd think they would offer a max deal. Suns match, so that's a four-year then sort of max deal,
yeah.
And they run it back. You agree with that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. There'll be a ton of teams who will just throw the max at him to just see if they can entice the Suns to let him go, but the Suns won't do that. If I'm the Suns, I just sign him to the max five-year straight away. I would do that because he's only 23. That contract is not going to be one you're going to be tough to move if things don't work out. He certainly can improve his game. Trey mentions the inside stuff. He only gets the free throw line about two times a game. He needs to be much more dominant inside. We've shown flashes of it this season. I love that little jump hook that he's got and the little push shot in the lane there. So he can develop. And if you're the Suns, okay, your window is still open. You may as well invest in these guys right now. And then if it still doesn't work in a year or two, then you can move on. But you don't give up a young talent like that just because he's a bit pissed off right now. Unless you're getting something back in return that's even better than him, which I don't think they will do. So I think.
So what was the reason for not doing it in the first place then? I mean, you're saying do it now.
Yeah.
A good season. Tass was right. Good regular season.
I think it's because they cheaped out on him. Myself. Mm-hmm. I mean, you draft this guy number one, and he's shown flashes of talent, like really good talent. He should be an all-star in the next couple of years. I think you would just say, you send the message, we believe in this guy.
Right.
Again, knowing that this is not going to be one of those contracts in 2 years' time, like, oh, how are we going to get off this? I think you have to invest in him and just to say to the other teams, he's not available under any circumstances. He may want to go somewhere else, but if you're the Suns, keep this window open. Like, you don't just throw out the baby with the bathwater, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Say, well, that's it. We had our chance. Booker is still, I mean, he's 25.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, Chris Paul, sure. But Bridges, what's he, 25 as well? He's also on a fairly big deal. This is a good core. This is a very good team. They can go much further than they did this season. So
it's a very good team, but it's a very expensive team suddenly with all these guys.
But I mean,
so you got to, I mean, when you, especially a guy like Sarver right now, still in control, of course. But, you know, if you're coming up short in the second round, then you're not going into luxury tax.
I think you're
going to
come up shorter if you don't have guys like Ayton though on your team as well. Again, if you've got a better option out there, sure. I don't think there is for them right now. And again, he's a billionaire. I'm not going to be crying tears over him if he has to spend a bit more money to win a championship.
Is there anything else that's sort of surrounding the Suns here? Is there anything, another need that they need to sort of take it to the next step? And do you even consider moving Chris Paul? Let's have that conversation.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, if you're, and you're right, the track record has shown he just like can't do this, but he's only getting older, he's not getting younger, that he can't do this for an entire season. He was probably helped out by the hand injury this year. We talked about that, remember? He was out for a while.
Mm.
Maybe actually saved him a little bit, saved those legs for a little bit, looked great in the Pelican series, looked good at the start of this one, and then disappeared. Is that insane, though, to move out that big deal, like you said, still, and try and get something in return, and obviously you're focusing then on Booker and Bridges and I guess Ayton in this equation.
Yeah, nothing is insane, but they have to get better internally, most likely. That's the question mark. It's on Ayton, it's on Booker, and yes, I don't think you can expect Chris Paul to be an elite player for four rounds. But that's what the chemistry here. That's what the recipe was for the Phoenix Suns. They needed him to be amazing. So Ayton is the number one, number two, number three question. I think Sarge may have helped a little, but the starting lineup has to get a little bit more varied in their offense. I mean, just be a little bit more dynamic, because Jason Kidd took one guy away, and that was the series.
So maybe we'll see Booker being triple teamed during the pickup runs this summer, and like that, like, will be the next step. Then he'll be able to handle the double teams. He'll be pissed about triple teams.
Yeah, exactly.
But then
he'll
be able to handle the double teams in the playoffs, if possible.
Well, I definitely think that Booker and Ayton should be in the gym together, working on how to attack pick and roll situations. Because, I mean, I think Chris Paul will come back. He's still waiting for this deal, and you know it's going to be hard to find a player to replace him with that you're going to be better off with. So I assume Chris Paul will be back, but going forward, like for the next 5 years, it's definitely Booker and Ayton's team over the course of things, and they just have to be able to perform in the playoffs. Like, it's weird that Ayton turned into Rudy Gobert in this series, because he did. He wasn't scoring inside. And he was food on the perimeter. Every time they saw him, they're like, okay, this is an easy layup for us. And that did not seem like it would be the case heading into this matchup.
All right, let's talk a little Warriors-Mavericks. JD, I think you got the schedule. This one's get started on, what, Wednesday? The Eastern Conference Finals start tomorrow on Tuesday night. But first game, game one here, 9 o'clock. TNT's got the West. Think they're happy about that?
Well, Shaq sort of talked about it a little bit there last night. They're happy they're not going to dry-ass Phoenix, he said to Charles.
Right, right. Well, we'll tee us up here, Lee. We'll do the deep dive tomorrow when we do both of the conference finals. We'll lock in our predictions and all that on tomorrow's show. But, yeah, what's your first thoughts here on Warriors-Mavericks in the West?
Absolute banger of a series. Banger. Really, really should be. Because let's look at it. Like, if you're the Warriors and you're Steve Kerr, you're like, okay, so what do we do here with Luka?
Who's back, by the way, Steve Kerr?
That's right. Do we go single coverage and just say, all right, we've got some good defenders. It's probably going to be Klay Thompson gets the first job on Luka. I don't think it'll be Steph. I don't think it'll be Andrew Wiggins. Draymond will get some time at some point. It won't be starting. And then obviously whoever their big is, it won't be them. So I think it's Klay. And I think Steve Kerr's first task will probably be, let's go single coverage because we know that the Mavs want to spread the floor out and get those guys like a Brunson, a Bullock, a Finney-Smith and Spencer when he comes off the bench. They want to shoot threes. That's what they want to do. So it's a pick your poison for sure, because it's like if we load up on Luka and dare those guys to beat us, they might be able to do that because they've done that in the first couple of series here. Mm-hmm. But alternatively, it's like one-on-one. No one's really going to stop Luka either. So he can easily go and score and get his. If he gets hot, as we saw last night, the Mavericks are very, very tough to defeat. So that's where I'm first looking. And I think then defensively, it's what do the Mavericks do? They've been outstanding defensively so far in the first two series here. So Steve Kerr, we know offensively, they've got so many weapons here. The Warriors, you know, obviously Steph and Klay, we know about those. Andrew Wiggins, I think, is going to be just plonked in the corner. Fire away if you get those threes. And then, of course, it depends exactly how they play a Looney or when Jordan Poole comes in or a Kuminga, whoever that big is, if they try to also exploit that with a little bit of their athleticism. You know, Draymond's going to be, I think, facilitating a ton of that offense at the top where he's like shooters everywhere and then guys just attacking the paint.
Aren't Kidd and the Mavs going to like say, Draymond, you do something. You try and
score. Yeah, I mean, I guess they will. Yeah. And this is the thing. This is the chess game here. It's like both teams, I think, can sort of really match each other well, can kind of blow each other out, but they're both kind of, if they both get hot, it's going to be incredible. So I'm so excited for this series because Luka, I mean, remember he missed the first three games against the Utah Jazz.
Yeah.
And it was like, is he injured? What's he going to do? And now he comes out down 3-2 in the series and came back and did that. I don't know who I'm going to pick. I'm glad we've got a couple of days here, but
You got one day. You have basically 24 hours to make your decision.
This one is a spicy, spicy series. The Warriors should be favorite. They're home. They're rested.
Yep.
But I think we're going to see a banger of a series.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with Banger Man over here?
Banger Man. Banger Man. My old friend. Yes. I'm jacked for this series, of course.
Cool. We got a banger and a jacked. Yeah. Can't wait to see what Trey is.
Keep going. Yeah, what do you think? I had banger and jack written down.
Oh, damn. Come up with a third one. what are you thinking, though, Tass, with this?
Banger and jacks. My favorite breakfast. What am I thinking? I can't wait to watch. Yeah, the isolation is definitely what the Warriors are going to do to Luka. They're not going to double him.
Right. They did it with Jokic.
Yeah. And they're going to try, and I think they're going to use a variety of guys. I think Wiggins will get plenty to turn on him. And, you know, unfortunately, Gary Payton II isn't around at this point. I don't think he'll be back to bother Luka. But, you know, that would be a nice little matchup to watch there on the perimeter. But Luka feels comfortable with the pressure. I think the Mavs are going to be in a very different spot defensively than they were, you know, facing that Suns offense. The Warriors are going to be moving, and there should be enough shots for those guys to get up. It's going to be different. I don't know if we're going to get to like a 90 threes per game. But something crazy is going to happen.
Yep.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of threes going up, and it's going to be delightful for sure.
What are you terming this one? Banger? He's jacked. What do you got?
This series is going to be on and popping.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Raise the roof.
Oh, crap. Yeah. On and popping.
On and popping. Does that work? I couldn't think of a third one. On and popping. I think it is because they're going to be on and popping those three-pointers. I think this really comes down to whoever shoots threes better.
That seems to be the case in every game.
Yeah, that is the case in every game. So here's your question. Who's better at small ball? Because that's what this is really going to come down to. Warriors small ball versus Mavs small ball. I'll say the Mavs have been better at generating wide open three-point looks because Steph has kind of struggled in the playoffs. I think he shot 32% from three against Memphis, which if you are the Mavericks, maybe you're thinking, oh, good, we can keep him to 32%. Or you think, uh-oh, he shot 32%. That means the bounce back is happening. But I guess we'll see. The Mavs have a lot of perimeter length, actually, with Reggie Bullock, Dorian Finney-Smith, even Frank Ntilikina, I thought, was pretty effective against Phoenix. Just those longer guards, I think, could be effective against, especially like a Jordan Poole, like who kind of struggled at the end of the Grizzlies series. So I don't know. Who's the best player in this series? Is it Luka or is it Steph? It's been Luka so far in the playoffs. Yeah. Obviously, the Warriors have the championship pedigree, and they've been playing small ball winning championships for seven seasons at this point. I kind of feel like the Mavs have a better small ball unit right now because you're not getting any scoring from the front court for the most part of the Warriors. So I think Draymond creating for others, getting wide open threes for the Warriors will be big. But when they go small, we shall see.
Yeah, I think the Mavs are loving the fact that they're underdogs again in this series. If you saw like kids' post-game comments and the whole like nobody believes in us, you know,
nobody believes in anyone.
No, they don't. But it's true, and at least in that last series. And you said it, the Warriors are favorites here. Yeah. They got the home court advantage, and I think actually I wouldn't like it if the Mavericks were favored, you know? It's right. Like, I think they're relishing the fact that they are the underdogs. Yeah. They can play loose, especially the way they play with all the three-pointers going up. And you've got Luka. You're confident that he's going to dictate the game. Yeah. So, yes, this is going to be a very just straight-up exciting series. I'll keep it very
I hope it lives up to it. That's the thing. I hope it does live up to it.
Yeah. Well, did the last, like, did Suns-Mavs live up to it? It was a weird series because there was no close games.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Remember
But then we had some, like, pretty epic performances from Luka.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Booker did have some good games.
Remember the Friday before last, we were like, this series might be over by the time we came in last Monday.
Yes.
And instead we're like, wow, we just had an incredible Game 7.
Yeah.
So, I guess it did in the end, but it didn't really either time.
Yeah, this is no close game sucks. That's the tough part.
Yeah.
But again, we will talk X Factors, other things to watch, and make our predictions on tomorrow's show. But you guys can get started now in the stream team. Hey, where are you leaning?
Honestly, probably living in the moment a little.
Dallas.
I think
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Wow, I love it.
Again,
so then the question is, are you going Mavericks right now? Are you thinking Mavericks in six because they're doing it at home, or are you thinking Mavericks in seven?
Yeah, after seeing Luka, I don't think it really matters now if it does go back to San Francisco now for seven. But I always think that if you can steal that game to get home court, to have a chance to close that at home, it is your best bet. But Luka, I think I'm leaning Mavs. Mm. I think I'm leaning Mavs right now.
Okay. We'll make our official predictions tomorrow. Let's take our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about Grant Williams. He's the new Steph Curry.
Yeah.
We'll talk about Grant Williams catching fire in Game 7, look ahead to Heat Celtics, and talk a little bit about the Bucks offseason. Don't go anywhere.
Danielle has taken up painting. Oil painting, acrylic painting, other painting. I don't know what it is, but it's just incredible. If I can convince her to open up a Shopify store, I know she'll be hearing the... Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, just do it, to the first real life store stage, see, you made a sale, all the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? How about that? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap, offering outdoor outfits, or paintings, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From the all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Here's some information. Just like entrepreneur David Scott Martin of Antique Candle did for No Dunks on Shopify. How about that? And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/nodunks, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/nodunks now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/nodunks.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Sort of ironic, though, when you think about it, because you want to go to a game, you get your seat through SeatGeek, mm-hmm. but then you want a game so entertaining that you're never sitting down. Mm.
That is pretty crazy. If you're sitting, you're almost like disappointed.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Oh, that's when
green good, red
bad. That's when the butt gets some air and is really excited. Wow.
Yeah, you got to air it out.
This is amazing. Good I'm point. Standing.
Let's get to talking about Grant Williams playing hero for the Boston Celtics.
Speaking of butts.
Yeah, that's right. Drained 7 threes in the Game 7 win on Sunday. Tess, is he the story from this one?
Well,
they left him open.
Watching Grant Williams, all I could think of was Big Baby Davis's comments recently saying, I look at Grant Williams and I say, that could have been me. If I had it all together, that could have been me. No, that's not what I was thinking. I was thinking Giannis Antetokounmpo played a ridiculously good series. Through 6 games, he was averaging 35 points. He was trying to put the team on his back like he did in the NBA Finals, and it looked good to start this game first quarter. He nearly had a triple-double. Yeah. He was 10-8-6 in the first quarter, but things slowed down. Game 7, he had only 25. He missed some bunnies. And as he said after the game, quote, legs heavy, body heavy, mind heavy. Everything was heavy. He just couldn't do it for 7 games. He really had to carry this team without Chris Middleton. They needed him to have a monster series like he did in the finals. And averaging 35 going into that game, he was. He was amazing. He had 3 40-point games. You know, last year in the finals, he had that 50-point game. He just couldn't get to that level, which is asking a hell of a lot. He shot 25 shots in all 7 games of the series. So he was trying to do that. First player to do that in over 20 years. Allen Iverson, the last player to do that. 200 points, 100 boards, 50 assists in a series for the first time ever in NBA history that a player got those numbers. And he's still leading the league in scoring. Playoff scoring at 31.7 as he sits down. And he sat as soon as he was pulled, 2 minutes left in this game, hit that bench, head back, eyes closed, soaking it all in. He was done. He just couldn't do what his team needed to because they couldn't support him without Chris Middleton. They needed Middleton on both sides, really. And the guys, you know, trying to fill in for him couldn't do enough. Bobby Porter shot 22% for the series. Grayson Allen had a good game one, and then after that kind of disappeared, 2 of 18 from deep in the final 6 games. While the Celtics got stronger, deeper, stronger, bigger, bigger butts, Grant Williams. Grant Williams alone took 18 threes in this game, an NBA record for most threes in a Game 7. And he tied the Game 7 makes record with 7. And that's why they were calling him Grant Curry after this game. Because he's from Charlotte, I guess. And, you know, that's where Steph is from as well. So, Grant Curry, sure. The Celtics made 53 more threes than the Bucks in their 7-game conference final series here. That was the biggest differential in a playoff series in NBA history. That's a big number.
That's 53. A huge number.
They're right there. The Bucks were right there. Just couldn't overcome it. And unfortunately, we got a bad Game 7 because Giannis had to be a monster again, especially with the guys not coming through beside him.
Game plan was to leave Grant Williams open. And he knocked down his first one, and then he was feeling it all game long. And I mean, actually, there was even a couple early on. He's like, should I take this again?
No. Yeah.
And then he didn't. And then I think Udoka and obviously, by all accounts, everybody's like, you got to shoot this, man.
Yeah. Literally everyone's like, if you don't shoot it, we're gonna hit you.
Yeah.
We're going to punch you in the face.
And, that was a good quote. A good quote from him saying, like, when you got 15 guys plus your coach saying to you, hey, shoot that next one. Shoot that next one. It's hard to get in your head and stop shooting. Big performance by the 14th guy on the bench, the 15th guy on the bench. Everybody chatting to him, and that helped.
Well, and Grant Williams got in foul trouble early because he was defending. He had a big role on this team, but he did sort of overcome that and then just came back and fired away. But the discrepancy in the three-point shooting is pretty huge. I mean, the Celtics for the series averaged 15 a game, the Bucks only 8. So you're basically giving up, you know, double the amount of three-pointers in every single game. But even still, even Giannis yesterday looked like he was going to just fill in a huge box score here. But he did seem to just the weight of everything, I think, sort of caught up with him a bit, where he knew every trip down the court he was seeing either Horford or Williams or Brown or Tatum or a combination of those guys. And he needed someone to be basically like a Spencer Dinwiddie, like someone sort of just release these the pressure on me to have to do everything. And they just didn't get that from anybody there. Drew Holiday struggled in this game. He's been good for the most the part of this series. But you could really tell. I think Brook Lopez was probably their second best player yesterday. I would have liked to have seen them go a little bit more inside. Both Brook and Giannis were able to sort of get those little pushy, floaty shots off. But again, when you're scoring twos and the other team feels like... It just they were just hitting a three every single time, especially at the start of that third quarter there where the game really got away from them. And that was it. The Bucks just you just were like, how are they going to be able to score enough here to keep up? And Jason Tatum, I mean, he only had 23 points, 8 assists yesterday. I thought he was remarkable again for this series.
Well, and then especially game six.
Game six is where they won.
They win the series, because of him.
Because of him. And that third and fourth quarter where he's hitting those long jumpers and it was like, man, he is on one here today. So congrats to the Celtics. They had to fight and scrap for it.
Yeah.
If Middleton plays, do the Bucks win? Maybe, probably. They didn't have him, though, and they still put up a pretty good fight. But, look, they led this series 1-0. They led this series 3-2, and they also lose in seven, although big difference, of course, they lose on the road in Game 7.
I mean, you talked about just Giannis sort of having to do everything for the entire series, where the Celtics, all of their wins had somebody else being the hero. Jaylen Brown in Game 2, Al Horford in Game 4, Jason Tatum in Game 6, just special, special stuff there. And then Grant Williams in Game 7, being left open and knocking them down, making them pay, 7 of 18 from deep.
Yeah, the series was really won in that game six because the Bucks got a Giannis game. Like 44 and 20 from Giannis, and then for the Celtics to actually pull out the win with Tatum going to one level above Giannis. I mean, that was the series right there because anything can happen in a game seven. And as we saw, one team made 4 threes, the other team made 22 threes. Sometimes it just comes down to 3-point shooting. You know what I'm saying? Whoever makes the most threes is going to win. And that's what it was in this one. The Bucks were happy to play their defense that we've seen them play for a bunch of seasons that has gotten them embarrassed in the 2019 season, the 2020 season. The shot is going to be there. Are you going to take it? Grant Williams was willing to take it, and the Bucks, even in the post-game press conferences, were basically saying, hey, this was the defense we decided to play. We said, if you beat us, Grant Williams, you beat us. And he completely did. Yeah. So kudos to the Celtics being able to pull off the win from the Grant Williams game and from the Al Horford game. Like, when your role players show up like that, you got to get the win. And they did in both of those circumstances. So this was incredible stuff from the Celtics. This has been the best series we've seen so far. It's a bummer we didn't get to see Milwaukee at completely full strength, but even not at full strength, they played them as if they were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, they put up a hell of a fight, the defending champs, without Chris Middleton. Do you think they win the series if Middleton plays? Because, like, what he can help defensively on the wing, and then, you know, he probably, in the series, if he hypothetically plays, there probably is a Chris Middleton game.
Of course.
So, I mean, that obviously helps their chances. I sort of think that way. Yeah. But it's hard. It's not to take anything away from the Celtics, who, I mean, had to give it their all and still beat them.
Yeah, it's hard not to think Middleton would have been a big factor, having watched, you know, so much of these Milwaukee Bucks over the last few years. He comes through, you know, for a game, or two, or three. I mean, he is their best perimeter scorer when they obviously lack perimeter scoring beside Giannis Antetokounmpo, who was going to the hoop and who was doing everything he could. And I think the big reason why people are picking the Boston Celtics right now as the team that's going to beat the Miami Heat and could win the championship is their resiliency to overcome that Game 5 loss where they were up 14 points in the fourth quarter. They gave that thing away. They ran into each other. Marcus Smart did what he did at the end of that game. They also overcame that Game 3 loss where they had the Marcus Smart free throw and the tip. They overcame a couple times. So they're a resilient bunch that's obviously been playing the best ball in the NBA the last few months, so that's why this Celtics Heat series could mirror a lot of people's picks in the Western Conference, where people are picking the quote unquote underdog / road team, even though the Celtics are the favorite as the road team here.
Okay, well, we'll get to that in a second, Heat Celtics and our initial thoughts on that, but with Milwaukee Bucks, what do you think the biggest question is surrounding them heading into the offseason? What do they got to shore up here?
Well, they were a very good three-point shooting team during the regular season, but not so much during the postseason. Now, of course, Middleton is a factor of that. But I think as well, you notice that like guys like Connaughton, Grayson Allen, they really can't step it up and fill in the gap. So I think that's where John Horst is mainly going to start looking around, because Middleton, Giannis, Drew, and Brook are all under contract next season. And Brook's 34. He missed, obviously, most of this season, but he looked pretty good when he did play, I thought, for the most part in the playoffs here. He's moving well enough. And that's why I think you've still got a core that's been together. They're a pretty tough, resilient group. If they have their stars, maybe they're still in the playoffs, maybe not. Who knows? So I think it's really more just around the edges. Wes Matthews was fine. but I think you want to probably improve in that area as well. So a little bit more depth and maybe that sort of other guy who you know can hit the threes, but I don't think they need major changes. I think Bud will be back. I don't think you see why they wouldn't bring him back. And again, Giannis is 27. He was incredible this season. You're getting 55 wins just from Giannis and nobody else on the roster anyway. So I think the Bucks overall don't want to look at this as a disaster or a letdown. They just say, yeah, you know what, injuries, maybe all those other playoff runs caught up with us a little bit. We need to improve the role player guys a little bit more depth, I think, is that. And they've got some flexibility here. Obviously, their big guys are all locked up anyway. They can make a few little moves.
But an injury to Middleton is a perfect example of why throughout a regular season you need to focus a little bit on building up guys on your bench and getting them some confidence, because something like that happens and then you need somebody to step up. And a lot of those guys, they couldn't over the course of a series, that's for sure. Connaughton, I mean, he was fine at times. Grayson Allen was garbage. I mean, I'm a little shocked Budenholzer continued to go with him as this series went on. Maybe he was just praying, like, one of these games he's got to hit some threes, and he never really did, and he was getting exposed on the other end. Wesley Matthews, I think age caught up to him a little bit as the series went on, too.
Poor Wesley.
But, yeah.
Well, who is he going to go to, though? Javon Carter,
I know.
Just to have a Javon Carter game, they gave up a lot for Jrue Holiday, and yeah, they're a top-heavy bunch that won a championship. They did it, but yeah, Pat Connaughton was their third best player in this series. Bobby Portis had such a great first round and then came back to earth here in the second round. Celtics were just really, really good at taking those guys away, though. They were very good. They got open shots. We saw the Grayson Allen game against the Bulls, and that changed big time in this series. Poor Wesley Matthews. It's a real Anderson Varejao situation. Played forever with the Cavs, couldn't get a title with them. Wesley Matthews, you know, he was there with the Bucks, then he left. They won a title and he came back, and they just couldn't get it done here. Feel for him. But yeah, they're a top-heavy bunch. But yeah, it's not fun to resort to this analysis, but Chris Middleton's there. This is another championship level team. And Giannis, I think, was he just showed that he is a number one guy, whether he's the best player in the game or whatever. You just need guys that can support him a little bit. They were so freaking close. But Holiday, he was put up his shots. We did everything you could ask from him other than, you know, being a little bit more efficient. He was trying out there. He averaged 20 in this series. But
he's trying to fill the Middleton void, and he did it for some moments in the series, and other times definitely did not.
And then the drop-off from there. You know, Pat Connaughton and Bobby Portis averaged 10 points in this series. They just needed more. Brooke was probably the guy, you know, maybe if he had some more push shots in there. But he couldn't hit a three, surprisingly. Mm-hmm. He hit 1-3 in this series. And that really is the difference to me. That guy should be able to, you know, light on fire from inside and outside. But maybe age is getting to him, too.
Yeah, he is 34 years old. He'll be going into the last year of his deal next year, but he's been like a key piece for the Bucks, so I assume he will at least be back. I don't know, though. It's like, you can't have it all. They've got three all-star players that they pay a ton of money to. One of them got hurt, so you're not going to have the depth there. Like Tass is saying, it's going to be Grayson Allen, Javon Carter, or George Hill. Like, what are you supposed to do in that scenario? Especially considering, like, during the year, Connaughton and Allen shot, like, 40% from three. They were just brutal against the Celtics here. The one big piece to me that was missing for Milwaukee this year, outside of Lopez being hurt for the majority of the years, they never had a PJ Tucker replacement. You talked about that a ton. He was huge against Kevin Durant in the playoffs last season. They just didn't have that big sort of defensive switchy wing / smaller big guy. They tried to get Ibaka. Traded for him during the trade deadline. He obviously wasn't in the rotation at all in the playoffs, and then it had like the knock-on effect of now Dante DiVincenzo is gone, who could have been another sort of potential option for Budenholzer out there on the wing. But I don't know. I mean, stars win in this league, no doubt about it. We just saw it with the Suns. Their two stars didn't show up, so they didn't win their Game 7. One of the stars for the Bucks was not available. If he's available, it's maybe a different series. This basically same team is going to run back next year. I actually think Wesley Matthews was a solid signing this year. Like, he played well. The Lakers would have loved to have him back, but is he going to be as good next year? Is Bobby Portis going to sign his player option, or is there another team that would be interested in Bobby Portis? Seems like a guy that would be desirable to a lot of teams. Same with Connaughton. He's got a player option, but other teams could perhaps be interested in him as well. So there's not a ton of moves for the Bucks to make. They need some pieces. They need some upgrades for sure, but they've got their core. They just have to hope they're healthy next year.
Relatively quick turnaround here for the Celtics as they prepare to face the Heat in the conference finals. Second time in the last three seasons. Game one, JD, that tips on Tuesday. 8:30 p.m. Eastern from South Beach there, following the draft lottery. You know, that's tomorrow.
I saw it going around yesterday, and I was like, oh,
it caught me by surprise. Yeah. Oh, yeah, let's find out where those ping pong balls are going to drop. That's prior to game one of the Eastern Conference Finals tomorrow. Again, we'll do our deep dive, and we'll make the official predictions on tomorrow's pod. But Trey, first thoughts on Miami-Boston here. Again, these two teams going at it once again here.
My first thoughts is that this is a huge step up in competition for Miami. They had the Hawks in round one. That was pretty easy. They had the Sixers in disarray without Embiid. Then he comes back. They were good for two games, and then he was hobbled. And pretty easy once again for Miami. The Celtics back-to-back, high-quality opponents. We thought maybe their first-round series against the Nets would be a pseudo-NBA final.
Sure.
Not the case. Mopped the floor with them. And then we had a classic against Milwaukee. So I think that Boston is at least better prepared coming into this series, having played some high-level playoff basketball so far. They've also got a little history from the bubble when the Heat beat the Celtics 4-2. That was like Jimmy Butler's kind of putting his name on the map, and that's the main thing I'm excited about. Jimmy Butler versus Jason Tatum. They both got a lot of defensive options. They're both going to switch a ton, but it does feel like one of those series where the best guy on one team will be going head-to-head with the best guy on the other team for a big chunk, and that's going to be really exciting because these two guys have been some great guys so far. We probably haven't talked enough about how good Jimmy Butler's been. 28 points per game, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 52 from the field, 36 from three. 2 steals as well. He's been on the all-tournament team as far as I'm concerned. Tatum right there with him. 28 a game, 5 rebounds, 6 assists, 44 from the field, 39 from 3. A steal, a block, doing it on both ends as well. That Game 6 duel with Giannis was like just another step in his superstar progression. So this is exciting to me. I mean, we got to worry about Kyle Lowry's status. I guess that's the one injury thing kind of hanging over this series at all. Robert Williams was able to come back for Game 7, but this should be a banger. I assume the Celtics are going to be most people's picks, which is exactly how the Heat would want it. Nobody's paying any attention to Miami right now. Yep. They're just happy to grind it out and get some dubs. Mm.
Yes, Celtics are favorites in this series, according to Vegas, despite going to be starting Game 1 on the road.
Rust versus rest. Okay. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, if the Heat win, better to be rested. Mm. The Celtics win, just got to keep on playing. The Heat were rusty. No, this should also be a great series. Yeah. And I wonder, Robert Williams was technically available yesterday, but he didn't play.
Yep.
So I wonder if the Celtics looked at that and thought, let's try to squeeze an extra day of rest in here because he's going to have potentially a very big series if he's going up against Bam inside there. This is where, I mean, look, Horford and PJ Tucker and Bam, it's going to be a physical dogfight down there. There's going to be a lot
Which the Celtics just went through versus the Bucks. Yeah. I think that's what sort of Trey's pointing out. I mean, it's like the Heat really weren't having to do that as much in these two series they've played.
Not a lot of stress yet.
No, not really.
But I think the Heat will also like that as well. They like a fight. They like to become very, very physical like that. Jimmy versus Jason, obviously can't wait for that. Tatum has been incredible, and he's younger, so he's got that age on his side, whereas Jimmy, you know, a little bit older here, so if he has to work on the defensive end, which I expect they're going to make him do, he's going to want that, but also at the same time, a longer series, I think, favors Boston in that sense. I think they're younger legs there. We haven't really seen great three-point shooting on the road, certainly from the Miami Heat so far in Philadelphia.
Definitely not in Philadelphia. No, they can only hit 7. That's where they cap out.
Yeah. So that, again, that's where I think it's really important for the Celtics to steal one of these first two games and get back to Boston and start raining those threes like we just saw against the Milwaukee Bucks. So I think things are favored in Boston's way right now. But again, Miami, it'd be crazy to dismiss or write off Miami because, they've got that same mentality. No one believes in the number one seed at home with a few extra days rest.
What do you think? What are you watching for?
I can't wait to see Jimmy against this Celtics defense. The Celtics are just so friggin' solid. I think anybody in that starting lineup can guard Jimmy Butler fairly well. I think it helps. You know, they overcame Antetokounmpo. They overcame Kevin Durant in the first series. Now, Jimmy is a little bit of a smaller player. I think, you know, Jaylen Brown can guard him. Well, he couldn't have guarded Giannis. Now you got Tatum, Al Horford, even Robert Williams can take a turn, and Marcus Smart is their tiny guy that Butler is bigger than. But that's going to be very tough for Jimmy in that bubble where, you know, the Celtics feel like they're a little bit young, a little bit green back then. Jason Tatum, you know, said it was his third year. He you know, the Heat just overwhelmed the Celtics in that series. Bam Adebayo was their leading scorer in that series. So Robert Williams is going to be pretty key here. He destroyed Daniel Tyson that series, and I think Robert Williams is going to, you know, if he can be out there, try and limit Bam, because I think Butler, as amazing as he's been, the Celtics are just They're real freaking deep right now. You'd think, well, the Heat are this team that comes at you with every single guy, but the Celtics are just playing better 1 through 8. The Heat have, you know, some tiny holes here. Even if Lowry comes back, he's not 100%. So I think the Celtics can pick on Max Strus and Gabe Vincent. Yeah, and or Lowry, even though he's a great defender, if he's unhealthy. So I think there's a couple holes there for the Heat, while the Celtics are just rock solid at this point.
Yeah, very excited for this one. Again, starts on Tuesday night. Let's hear predictions from you guys in the stream team right now. We'll lock ours in tomorrow when we do the deep dives on both of these series. I'm just excited to see, like we just saw in the last series between the Bucks and Celtics, like who are the random guys that's going to like step up? And is there another Max Strus game in the mix here for Miami? Can Grant do that again? Mm. You know, Peyton Pritchard, whatever. Like, it's going to be like, we both know these teams are going to play like elite defense, mm-hmm. and nothing's going to be easy. Again, very similar, I think, to the Bucks-Celtics series in that sense. But then that means, you know, somebody's got to step up and have like sort of those out-of-body experiences. And I think there's so many guys on both squads that very easily could step into that role. So it should be for a fun one. And these are both like, the Celtics have been the best team for months. Record-wise, very similar. 53 wins from Miami, 51 from Boston. They do have home court, which is huge. Oh, we forgot to mention that part came up, the old idea that Game 7 was in Boston. Milwaukee could have had that.
Yes.
And that was addressed there by the Celtics after the game. You know, weren't ducking anybody, taking care of the Nets, and having home court advantage, which was huge. But they don't have it here. Can't wait. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Any other final thoughts, though, to tee us up? Is this one going to be easier for you to decide than the last one, the Western Conference, or...?
Probably. And I have a night to sleep on this one, but
you're tipping your hand though. You're a Beantown boy.
I'm definitely leaning Beantowners. Definitely.
Okay. Yeah, I'm seeing in the Athletic Slack channel there was a request for all the writers' picks for NBA champ. Celtics are coming in hot. Ooh, right.
Wow.
They're quite popular amongst the writers.
I was going to ask you, the final question was, can any of these four teams left win the title realistically? Does it feel like this is the most open it's been in a long time?
Yes, which is great.
For the conference finals? Yeah.
Yeah.
So you think so?
I absolutely do, yeah. Yeah.
So take me through the reasoning. Warriors experience, obviously, with their three guys. They got one more run in them here.
Yep.
You got Luka on the Mavs. Yep. And the way they play, like, just bomb away. Here, I'll do it for you.
Yeah,
The Miami Heat. My God, Jimmy Butler. This is the final thing he's got to do. We know he's a 16-game player. They've got some experience. Already been to the finals before. Play the Celtics well. And then Boston. I mean, they just played Milwaukee Bucks. He just took down the defending champs. Yeah. What does that do for your conference? Yeah. That may have been the finals for all we know right there. So there you go.
Yeah, thank you. I agree with all of that. The thing is, you know, like say with Dallas, there's something probably of the teams remaining still a little unbelievable, because I think they have a huge gap in the middle. They don't have even any sort of interior presence at all. But they just embarrassed the Suns. They embarrassed the Utah Jazz. And Luka, to me, is like, he is so born for this moment. He's been building to this moment. So he would not be afraid of anyone. One of the best games of the season was Dallas in Boston, where Luka won that game for them late. When Boston was on that huge hot streak, I'm pretty sure that he ended that streak in Boston with one of his great performances. Dinwiddie, in fact, hit the game winner in that one. I'm just sort of I'm rain-manning it a little bit here. But that's why. I mean, like Luka, there's no one out there who I think, wow, this team can shut Luka down. So,
right.
You know, I mean, again, we just saw one of the most incredible performances. So it's freshest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I can see.
But it's what you're getting at is, we're at the point with Luka. Is he like young LeBron level? Where it's like, God, who the hell wants to bet against that?
Yeah.
Or, you know, of course, young MJ level, where you're suddenly just like, and they would lose series. And that could happen here. But it's like, God, you don't want to bet against the guy right now because he like just loves these big games.
Yeah, of the four teams, it seems like the Mavs got, you know, there's something magical about it. And I hate every Luka nickname out there generally. I think Luka's good enough, but
what about
Luka Magic? That's a nickname.
What about the donk?
Feels
though?
Magical.
You don't like the donk? You haven't said
for
the
a
donk
fun
once.
One.
Oh, no, I haven't. Yeah, I don't know why.
You got rid of the donk.
Oh, it'll be back. It'll be back.
Yeah, okay, great.
The Matador, El Matador, Cool Hand, The Don, Wonder Boy, El Nino Maravilla. El Nino Maravilla. Okay.
The beautiful kid.
The beautiful kid. All right. Swaggy L.
Swaggy L.
That makes me chuckle.
Took your nickname.
Luka Legend, Too Easy. What? And Luka Magic.
How many nicknames does this guy have?
That's why there's no good ones, so people
zero.
Just keep on coming up with them.
Wow. Luka's good. Luka is good.
It's a great name. Done. It's a great first name.
This does seem to be, this series, I would say, perfect one to swerve. Everybody's going to be on the Celtics.
Yeah.
Everybody's going to be picking the Celtics. You'll see like a graphic. This guy, Celtics, 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 Celtics. If you want to be smart, pick the Heat, because if they pull it off, there won't be that many people picking the Heat.
Are you tipping your hand? Are you guys like, going tomorrow? You going to swerve tomorrow?
You know I'm all about three-pointers.
Yeah, you are.
And I got to say, the Celtics are better at getting three-pointers than the Heat are. But I'm just saying that that's a... I think that it feels like the Heat are ranked number four right now of the teams that are left in the conference finals, which is why, to me, this would be a worthy swervy.
A worthy?
Yeah. Tell you what.
Swervy, worthy by Kirby. Could have got there.
If it's Warriors Heat, that'll be a tough old travel series.
Thinking about the reporters out there.
Tough old travel series.
Feel for them.
Yeah. San Fran to Miami and back.
Wow. You know, Boston to the Bay, so much easier.
Well, a little bit, I think. A little bit.
Mm-hmm. Eastern cities.
A little bit. All right, let's take our final break. When we come back, we got Tweet of the Night, and we'll wrap up this bad boy.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Yeah, we can make this one quick. It's from Tim. At Duggan the DM on Twitter. He added us at No Dunks Inc. From now on, the Luka special is when a player has the same amount of points as an entire team by halftime. Tim, I love it. I think it's great.
Tim.
He's like, oh, this game, the Luka special that, you know, team just X dropped on team Y here because, you know, somebody brought it up here earlier in the show. After game five, Booker takes the hit. He's lying on the ground for a while. Somebody's recording him right there sitting baseline. And, you know, they even say something like, Booker, get up. Or, are you okay? Or something along those lines. And then he gives a little sly look over. And then calls it the Luka special. You know, I guess the idea that he's selling it, a little dramatic, lying on the ground a little longer than he probably needed to. And whoops, ever since Booker said that, Luka just kicked his ass. But anyway, I like this tweet. How do you feel about the Luka special? Like he did in Game 7, had the same amount of points as the team he's taking on.
Why not?
That's good.
Name it after him because it's just so rare.
Yes.
That we'll remember. I think we'll remember this moment. A lot of time these stats kind of fly out and we don't remember it. But, yeah, so unique for a team to be outscored by one guy at half. Yeah, we'll remember it,
Are we going to count it or call it a Luka special in a regular season game?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. It's pretty rare.
It can't happen all that often, right? There's got to be a way to be able to pull this out, too. I'm sure somebody with the Excel skills will be able to figure out the spreadsheets on this one. But, I mean, like, what? I don't know. Twice a season? Maybe it happens? I think that's probably even higher. Yeah. Once a season? It feels like this was our one time. But, yeah, Luka special. It could catch on.
Okay.
Who had the most points in a game this season? I mean, did we have a 60?
Tatum?
Yeah, Tatum went for a lot.
Anyway, Luka was asked about that after the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he hesitated for just a second. And they said, did you know you had the same amount of points as Suns? And he's like, yes, of course.
And then a lot of people are saying this whole, you know, making fun of him. Like, whatever Booker's saying, of course, caught on camera, the Luka special. That it's now on the list of, like, I guess, taunts going wrong all time. up there with LeBron and... Wade doing the whole coughing thing against Dirk back in the, 11 finals?
Mm-hmm.
There was another one that was coming. I forget now, but this one probably on that short list of like, whoops, you poked the bear on that one and it blew up in your face. If you believe in such things.
Well, I saw that Chris Paul and Devin Booker also showed up wearing all black.
There was that
to
too.
Game six.
Yeah, yeah.
Tough look to lose the funeral game and then lose a game 7 by 33 on your home court. Highest scoring games this season. Mm. Kyrie Irving and Karl Anthony Towns both went for 60. I don't think they had as many as their opponents at halftime,
That's interesting. Now, we won't be doing this for a second half, right?
It's harder to keep track of,
harder to keep track.
Nobody cares about just second half points.
Yeah, okay. All right, Tim, great suggestion. We love it. We'll try and remember if it happens again at some point, either in the playoffs here or next season. Let's call it there. We got to get ready for our show tomorrow, where we lock in our predictions for both deep these dive. Conference yeah. finals. Our deep dive. That's
just
right.
Just splashing around today.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
A little point for you. A little point for you.
But tomorrow, straight up, diving board. Yeah, deep dive.
You want to hear about the ninth man in this series? Tune in tomorrow.
I'm going to throw a hockey puck into the deep end. Tass going to go get it tomorrow when we talk about these conference finals. That's how deep we're going. You might have to throw on your snooba gear tomorrow. Going so deep. I guess you're not that deep when you snooba.
Well,
scuba,
yeah. 20 to 30 feet deep. That's
pretty deep.
No, that's deep, that's, yeah. You feel the pressure on the old...
You might be talking about Peyton Pritchard tomorrow in great detail.
P squared.
That's right.
Yeah. I actually like that. When you go to your deepest take, you got to put goggles and a snorkel on and talk through the tunnel.
I do like that, too.
All right, everybody bring your beachwear tomorrow.
All right.
We're not reading any emails.
We're going deep.
We're going to get a Luke Cornett shout-out tomorrow. Nick Stauskas? Nick Stauskas?
Oh, I'm getting the bends from going so deep.
I'm talking about Trey Burke tomorrow for sure. Email in your NBA questions to nodunks@theathletic.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, @NoDunksInc. Get yourself an athletic subscription. Go to theathletic.com/NoDunks. And if you would like some No Dunks gear, go over to NoDunks.com for all of our t-shirts and hoodies and shorts and mugs. And we have those jerseys coming very, very soon. The No Dunks throwback jerseys inspired by the Nuggets, and we have a Grizzlies team. They're coming very soon. Limited edition, these. I think we're only making 100 of each. So it's right around the corner. So get ready.
Ooh, yeah. Love to have that on and then take it off right before I go snoobaing. Because you can't snooba in it.
Yeah, no, you wouldn't want to. Not.
But great beachwear.
Yeah, absolutely. A tank
proper
top.
Proper beachwear.
100%. Until tomorrow, guys, when we do our predictions for the conference finals. Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us. And remember, I don't know how to size my jerseys anymore. Yeah. I don't really wear stuff baggy, but with a jersey, you don't want to go too snug.
Yeah, no, it's you got to find the sweet spot.
I'm a little worried about the size I picked. But jerseys are so big. Anyway, even if you pick a smaller one. So I think I'm okay.
Okay. Embrace the day, people.